Alam Vatsati
Vavacena
Patmana
Tamodvarena Patmana
Yena Punya Janan Etan
Yena Punya Janan Etan
Avatistvam Anagasha
Avatistvam Anagasha
Manu Uvacha
Manu Uvacha
Manu said
Manu said
Alam
Alam
Enough
Enough
Vatsa
Vatsa
My dear boy
My dear boy
Atiroshena
Atiroshena
With excessive anger
With excessive anger
Tamadvarena
Tamadvarena
The path of ignorance
The path of ignorance
Patmana
Patmana
Sinful
Sinful
Yena
Yena
By which
By which
Punyajanan
Punyajanan
The Yakshas
Yakshas
Etan
Etan
All these
All these
Abhidhi
Abhidhi
You have killed
You have killed
Tvam
Tvam
You
You
Anagashaha
Anagashaha
Offenseless
Offenseless
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Lord Manu said, My dear son, please stop. It is not good to become unnecessarily angry. It is the path to hellish life. Now you are going beyond the limit by killing yakshas who are actually not offenders. Translation responsively. Lord Manu said,
Lord Manu said,
My dear son,
My dear son,
please stop.
Please stop.
It is not good to become unnecessarily angry.
It is not good to become unnecessarily angry.
It is the path to hellish life.
It is the path to hellish life.
Now you are going beyond the limit.
Now you are going beyond the limit.
By killing yakshas.
By killing yakshas.
Who are actually not offenders.
Who are actually not offenders.
Purport. In this verse, the word Atiroshena means with unnecessary anger. When Dhruva Maharaj went beyond the limits of necessary anger, his grandfather, Svayambhuva Manu, immediately came to protect him from further sinful action. From this we can understand that killing is not bad, but when killing is done unnecessarily, or when an offenseless person is killed, such killing opens the path to hell. Dhruva Maharaj was saved from such sinful action because he was a great devotee. A kshatriya is allowed to kill only for maintenance of the law and order of the state. He is not allowed to kill or commit violence without reason. Violence is certainly a path leading to a hellish condition of life, but it is also required for maintenance of the law and order of the state. Here, Lord Manu prohibited Dhruva Maharaj from killing the yakshas because only one of them was punishable for killing his brother, Uttama. Not all of the yakshas' citizens were punishable. We find in modern warfare, however, that attacks are made upon innocent citizens who are without fault. According to the law of Manu, such warfare is a most sinful activity. Furthermore, at the present moment, civilized nations are unnecessarily maintaining many slaughterhouses for killing innocent animals. When a nation is attacked by its enemies, the wholesale slaughter of the citizens should be taken as a reaction to their own sinful activities. That is nature's law. Omagyan timirandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshur umilitam yena tatsmai shri gurve namaha shri taitanya manohishtam stapitam yena bhutale Svayam rupa kadamayam tadati sva padantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sarvaitam Sarvadutam Prijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Hare Krishna Kuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye panchakalpa trubhyascha kripasindubhye vacha patitanam pavnebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasadam Bhutale Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityanam. Namaste Saraswati Deva. Gauravani Pacharani Nirvishesha Sunyavani Pasitare Shatani. So, the verse again, Lord Manu said, "My dear son, please stop. It is not good to become unnecessarily angry. It is the path to hellish life. Now you are going beyond the limit by killing yakshas who are actually not offenders." So we've come to a series of verses spoken by Lord Manu. In chapter 11, I wasn't here for many verses in chapter 10. So did you all enjoy chapter 10? Chapter 10 was Dhruva Maharaj's fight with the Yakshas. I was just catching up on those verses, and it's very amazing, very interesting. I know boys often like stories of battles and so on. So there's a lot of that. So some of the highlights I thought of that chapter was in Dhruva Maharaj's fight in verse 20. The remaining yakshas, who somehow or other were not killed, had their limbs cut to pieces by the arrows of the great warrior Dhruva Maharaj. Thus they began to flee, just as elephants flee when defeated by a lion. And then the yakshas fought back and displayed their magic. Dhruva Maharaj also saw many big serpents with angry eyes vomiting forth fire and coming to devour him, along with groups of mad elephants, lions and tigers. But although most of the chapter was very descriptive like that, and a very amazing description of the battle and between Dhruva Maharaj and the Yakshas, but we also know that Srimad Bhagavatam is about glorifying Krishna. It's not like you go to a bookshop and pick out an adventure book or pick out a story about a war and just enjoy some novel, fictional story. So in toward the end of that chapter, we found that the Lord's holy name is glorified. The sages said to Dhruva Maharaj, "O son of King Uttanapad, may the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Shangadanva, who relieves the distresses of his devotees, kill all your threatening enemies. The holy name of the Lord is as powerful as the Lord himself. Therefore, simply by chanting and hearing the holy name of the Lord, many men can be fully protected from fierce death without difficulty. Thus the devotee is saved." So in this verse, chapter continuing, that Manu, although you might wonder why it says this battle, and we get many interesting instructions that Manu is going to give us up until the end of this chapter, almost 30 verses. And so today's verse, Manu Uvacha, so this is not the Manu in the Bhagavad Gita, as it says in verse 1 of chapter 4. That was the Vivasvan, who was, Krishna says that he spoke the Bhagavad Gita first to the sun god, and then to the sun god Vivasvan, and then to his son, Then the Sun God spoke it to his son, Manu, Vaivasvata Manu. So this is a different Manu that's speaking today's verse. So there's some interesting information about the Manus in Srimad Bhagavatam. And as we learned that, just in a single day of Lord Brahma, there's 14 Manus. And this current one is Swayambhuva Manu who's speaking. So this pastime of Dhruva Maharaj occurred, you know, many, many, many millions of years ago. In the first Manu, Swayambhuva Manu, and Vaivasvata Manu, who is the current Manu, he's the seventh Manu, so quite a big gap. And the other Manus, the second one is Svarochisa, third is Uttama, fourth is Tamasa, five is Raivata, sixth is Chakshusha, current one, seventh is Vaivasvata. Then coming up in this day of Lord Brahma, after lunch, is Sarvani, Daksha Sarvani, Brahma Sarvani, Dharma Sarvani, Rudra Sarvani, Deva Sarvani, and Indra Sarvani. So this is just in one day of Brahma. And of course, Lord Brahma lives for 100 years. So in just in one year, there's 5,040 Manus. And so in the whole lifespan of Lord Brahma, there's 504,000 Manus. And each of the Manus lives for 72 cycles of the yugas. It's an inconceivably long amount of time. And even, what to speak of the Manus, even the Lord Brahmas, they're just coming and going just in the breathing of Mahavishnu. So this is, and the different, it's interesting, the different pastimes of, in Srimad Bhagavatam occur in the different different Manus. I was reading how the Daksha Yajna, which was earlier in the fourth canto, we might feel like it was the previous Manu when that happened. So the Daksha Yajna occurred also in the Swayambhuva Manu, and Lord Daksha was, he was punished, Prajapati Daksha was punished, got the head of a goat. And then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says that he did penance for five whole Manus. And up until the Chakshusha Manu, so in the sixth Manu, Daksha returned and he reappears in Bhagavatam. But that's many Manus later. So, therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam has this overarching view and a huge, long history, pulling out all the important historical events connected with the Lord and his devotees over millennia, and so it's very interesting. So, and also Manu, not only he's speaking today's verse, but he's also a Mahajan. So it was interesting to revise who are the Manus, who are the Mahajans, and anyone who may not know the verse in Canto 6, when Yamaraj is speaking to his messengers, the Yamadutas, so the famous verse, Swayambhu Narada Shambhu, the first three Mahajans, Kumara Kapalo Manu, Palado Janako Bhishmo Bali Vayasaki Vayam. And then Dvada Shaite Vishani Mo Dhamam Bhagavatam Bataha Uyam Vishudham Dumo Dubodham Yam Gyatvam Ritam Ashnute. So there's Lord Brahma, Bhagavan Narada, Narada Muni, Lord Shiva, the four Kumaras, Lord Kapila, the son of Devahuti, Swayambhuva Manu, not Vaivasvata Manu, interestingly, Balad Maharaj, Janak Maharaj, Grandfather Bhishma, Bali Maharaj, Shukadeva Goswami, and I myself, or Yamaraj, know the real religious principle. So, and he says, my dear servants, this transcendental religious principle, which is known as Bhagavad Dharma, or surrender unto the Supreme Lord and love for me, him, is uncontaminated by the material modes of nature. It is very confidential and difficult for ordinary human beings to understand. But if by chance one fortunately understands it, he is immediately liberated and thus he returns home back to Godhead. So the Mahajans, Prabhupada describes, you know, they know something about the Supreme Lord. So it's very, very difficult to actually know the Supreme Lord Krishna completely. But these Mahajans, they know something about Krishna and the path to attain him, attain loving service to him. And the lesser demigods, they can know much less about Krishna. The Gandharvas and, you know, other demigods like that, they can't know as much as the Mahajans about Krishna. And so the main theme of the following, of this whole chapter, I guess, and the following verses is anger and having, you know, anger, enemies, friends. Dhruv Maharaj got very angry at the Yakshas. But Prabhupada writes that, you know, it's a misconception to think that anger and envy are purely, always material. There's, sometimes the anger is displayed by a devotee. And Prabhupada writes in this purport that Kshatriya is allowed to kill, that it's necessary to commit violence. So, Kshat, as Prabhupada explains, is Kshat is to hurt someone, and Trayate is to protect. So the Kshatriyas are protecting us, or protecting the citizens from violence or hurt. There's not many Kshatriyas nowadays. So a lot of people are not protected. Most people, hardly anyone is protected. So the devotees take shelter of Krishna for protection. So the Kshatriyas were allowed to kill people if necessary to protect others. And Prabhupada gives a story about if you were a thief in, I think it was Pakistan or somewhere, one of the countries close to India. But if you were a thief, if you were caught in Pakistan and you're a thief, then the punishment was your hand was chopped off. So this is also protecting other citizens from committing the same sinful action of stealing. That it's a very nice deterrent, that you see what happens to the thief. They lost their hand. It's other Krishna, he's got a sore hand at the moment, broken wrist, but he can still use his hand and his hand will get better. But if you lost your hand, then that's a very great punishment. So this is the duties of the Kshatriya: give punishment to protect people from, ultimately all the duties of Dvainas are connected to helping people in their spiritual advancement. So if people are committing sinful acts, then they're not going to make, you have to be free from sinful actions, reactions, to make spiritual progress. So to protect people from sinful actions, then there has to be punishment for committing sinful actions. So anger is necessary. Anger and maybe violence, I remember in primary school, there was, it's funny sometimes the things you remember, but there was just a, like a demonstration of a karate teacher. A karate teacher came and just did a, you know, one-off demonstration for the kids. And I remember he said that the first thing, if you're faced with an attacker, the first thing that you need to do is to become angry. Whereas if you're just, you know, you're faced with an attacker and you're like, you know, you freeze or you get scared, then you're not going to have much hope of fighting off the attacker. So that was interesting. He said the first thing you've got to do, you've got to become angry to fight off someone. And just like in the animal kingdom, if a mother is protecting her children, then she can take on like a much bigger opponent. Just like if you go to Albert Park Lake and you happen to walk in front of a mother swan, and like she thinks you're going to like go near her babies, she'll become so aggressive, and like, you know, you might be a big tall human. Swans are pretty big, but even other animals, even a small animal, if they attack you very viciously because they're protecting their young, then you don't want to mess with them. They're like, you'll run far away. So, you know, even like maybe a mother cat or something, she'll take on like a pack of dogs to protect her kittens. So, because she's very angry, she's like, and then so even in that case, the dogs might run away. They're like, they don't want to mess with the angry mother cat. So anger is very powerful like that. It's such an intense energy. But the Kshatriyas use that energy to offer protection and save other people, not for themselves. So this is the this is the art to learn. And you know, many of us, we won't really have Kshatriya tendencies, so may not be applicable for us to become angry at an attacker. It's probably better for us to just try to diffuse the situation, or somehow get out of the situation. I remember I went to St Kilda to buy some boga, and it was just an ordinary day, and I parked the van, and I had to buy some rice. Somehow the rice had run out. I come back to the van with the trolley, and then this man comes over. It's like he was on the phone, but then he hung up the phone saying, "Oh, so it's you." And he got really angry because I had actually parked the van in front of a loading zone. Like, it's just in a very, you know, back street, not like a main road or anything. So it's just, and it's like a Saturday morning, it's like not many people around. But still there was this like loading zone, says, you know, 24-hour access required. But I had, I got out of the van on the driver's side. So I completely didn't see that, because that was painted on a garage, a roller door. So I didn't see that until I got back to the van, and there was this man there with the rice, and he just got furious. He was like, "I've been trying to like, you know, call around, and I was going to get this van towed," and he was just like fuming at me, and I was like, you know, I couldn't, I wasn't really going to get angry back. And he also had red hair, so like, if you know, in Ayurveda, if you have, you know, people with red hair, that means they've got more pitta, fire, so anger. But he was ready to have a go at me, actually. I was quite shaken up after that. So I just kind of like put my rice in the van and, got out of there. But, so this is, you know, the power of anger has to be, the Kshatriyas, you know, they're cultured, they're civilized, so they get training how to utilize their anger, which is, you know, if someone has Kshatriya nature, then that's going to be a natural tendency. So you can't say, you know, and we want the Kshatriyas to get angry, like Krishna chastised Arjuna for not getting angry on the battlefield. So that's his duty, but that duty has to be channeled in Krishna consciousness. Like Hanuman burning the whole city of Lanka, that's the other example of anger being used in Krishna service. And, you know, there's also the description of the six types of aggressors who can be killed. So violence has to be used against these six kinds of people. You know, the people that steal your spouse or wife, who invade your land, invade your home, someone who might administer poison. These various types of people, there you're allowed to kill them, or Kshatriyas are allowed to kill them. So but this is more the exception. This using this anger in Krishna service, it doesn't arise so often. Of course, you know, in the early days when people were a bit more inimical to devotees, and you know, just out of fear of the unknown sort of thing, and who are these people, strange people wearing saffron and bedcloths and bald heads in the days of the hippies when everyone had long hair. So it's very different for people, and some people reacted in anger and tried to harm devotees, so devotees had to protect themselves. But in general, that is more the exception. And generally, if we see Krishna's teachings in Bhagavad Gita and Prabhupada's teachings, that the devotees are expected to be peaceful and kind to every living entity. So, also we might, you know, we shouldn't have the conception of friends and enemies so much, such as Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita that the demoniac person, when Krishna describes the demoniac qualities, he says that anger is one of the demoniac qualities. And of course in this purport that it's one of the paths to hell. So Krishna says that the demonic person, he thinks in such a way that he thinks, you know, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him. And my other enemies will also be killed. I am the Lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man, surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices. I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. So Krishna says these persons are deluded when they're thinking of people as their enemies and they're going to kill them. So in the same way, we should not come to Krishna thinking that he will help us destroy our enemies in this world, beginning with our spouse. All these people, they're trying to stop me from enjoying this world. I should enjoy. And, you know, if anyone gets in the way of my sense enjoyment, then Krishna should help me to, you know, remove these obstacles. So we shouldn't have this kind of mentality. But the overriding or the more prominent teaching that Krishna gives is Sarin Mitra Udasina Majasta Dvesha Bandushu Sarushapi Chapapeshu Samabuddhi Vishishite. So Samabuddhi, equal intelligence. A person is considered still further advanced when he regards honest well-wishers, affectionate benefactors, the neutral mediators, the envious, friends and enemies, the pious and the sinners, all with an equal mind. And Krishna describes the transcendentally situated person as in the purport he explains, such a person takes everyone as his dear friend who helps him in his execution of Krishna consciousness, and he does not hate his so-called enemy. He is equally disposed and sees everything on an equal level because he knows perfectly well that he has nothing to do with material existence. So this is a nice point that we may have enemies, because it's, even Krishna had enemies. Shishupal, Dantavakra and Kamsa, they thought of Krishna as their enemy. But Krishna didn't think of them as his enemy. So people may view us in one way, but we don't have to view them in the same way. We have that choice. So Krishna actually, those people who were thinking of him as his, as they thought Krishna was their enemy, when Krishna killed them, then they were, achieved liberation, maybe into the Brahman effulgence. So this shows that Krishna didn't consider them as his enemy. He didn't cast them into the, as he says in Gita, cast them into the lower species of life. Yeah, but because they were always thinking of him, he actually awarded them to some degree. Not as much as the devotees who are thinking of him as in love, but just by thinking about him, even in envy, they got some reward from Krishna. We shouldn't become the enemy of our enemies. People might think, this devotee is my enemy or something. But we should not think of that person as our enemy. We should still see them, have a neutral disposition toward that person, or neutral mentality, that we still see everyone as a servant of Krishna, part and parcel of Krishna. Because it's actually in mode of passion, the Rajagun, that when one has the knowledge of seeing everyone as a different, in every, as Krishna says, in every different body, there is a different type of living entity. He says this is knowledge in the mode of passion. If we see, different people, just according to the body, then this is Rajagun. So we cannot make spiritual progress if our mentality is in Rajagun, mode of passion. And actually, this discussion about being friendly to everyone comes up in a few verses. In verse 13, Prabhupada is explaining about the Majjhima Adhikari, that they are cognizant or aware of their relationship with Krishna, they're aware of their relationship with other devotees, and they're aware of their relationship with the innocent people who are not in Krishna consciousness, and they're aware of their relationship with the envious people. So with the devotees, the Majjhima Adhikari, we should be aspiring Majjhima Adhikaris, makes friends with devotees. So even if we don't know devotees particularly well, but at least, we see their service that they're doing, and we really appreciate the service that they're doing. So this is friendship among devotees, that it's not just on a material platform, not a material friendship, but our friendship with devotees is connected to serving Krishna. And so therefore we can, even if we don't know a devotee very well, but we can still have a friendly attitude with them, toward them, because we see their service, we see their chanting every day, trying to apply Krishna consciousness. And so, you know, we're appreciative of their efforts, and they're trying to, you know, implement Prabhupada's teachings in their life. So like this, we have a friendly attitude toward all the devotees. And even the non-devotees, we should be friendly toward, have a friendly attitude toward all the non-devotees. Of course, we, you know, like, it's like in a family, if one sibling is kind of so-called gone astray and is committing all sinful activities, but still the other siblings who may be on the, you know, not doing those activities, they're still, they don't reject that brother or sister, but they see, well, okay, they're, you know, they're struggling with something, they're maybe taking shelter of sinful activities wrongly, maybe out of ignorance. And but if they can come to, if non-devotees can come to Krishna consciousness, then they will, they'll be much happier. They'll come to their normal normal position in life. So like this, we should not you know, dislike or reject. We should not reject non-devotees just because they're engaged in sinful activities, which we may have, like, we were also maybe engaged in similar activities previously before meeting devotees. So the Majjhima Adhikari shows compassion and tries to help non-devotees by allowing them to hear the holy names, allowing them to hear about Krishna through Srila Prabhupada's books and tasting Krishna prasadam. So like this, we, you know, even if the non-devotees don't appreciate our efforts, but still devotees try to help them. So this is the main teaching that we find in Bhagavad Gita, that although violence is sometimes necessary for the Kshatriyas, but overall, our, you know, a devotee is described as peaceful, you know, not angry. And of course, you know, Prabhupada would also display anger sometimes. The devotee does. And that's actually the service of the spiritual master, to chastise his or her disciples and to correct them. But they do that out of compassion. They're not, you know, it's not a, getting angry at a disciple is not an envious thing that the spiritual master does. You know, it may not be like a, you know, getting very, very angry, but it might just be a mild chastisement or a, you know, pointing out some mistake from the devotee, from the disciple. So this is their service to correct us. And sometimes that might mean they're angry. And I think there's, even Prabhupada says, you know, I have to get angry to save you, from so that you, you know, you learn about the proper process of Krishna consciousness, and to save you from material consciousness. And so, but then, you know, when the devotee displays their anger, but then they're Goswamis, so they have control of their senses, so they don't, you know, the anger doesn't control them. They display that anger, then they withdraw it, they bring it back. You know, as Krishna describes of the turtle, withdrawing its limbs within its shell. So the turtle can poke its legs out and then bring its legs back in. So the devotee can, if necessary, display anger, but it's most of the time they don't, you know, they're not feeling angry and they're feeling peaceful because they're happy in Krishna consciousness, thinking about Krishna and you know, praying to Krishna for his mercy that they can make progress and be engaged in his service. So like this. So I'll just leave it there, see if anyone has any comments or questions about...
Why were the Yakshas offenders?
Oh, you think why they're not offenders? Yeah, because it says in today's verse that you know, Dhruva Maharaj was going beyond the limit by killing Yakshas who are actually not offenders. So that was discussed in the purport that, where is it? Oh, okay, there it is. So, Lord Manu prohibited Dhruva Maharaj from killing the Yakshas because only one of them was punishable for killing his brother Uttama. Not all of the Yaksha citizens were punishable. So, just like if someone commits a murder, you know, the murderer is punishable, but you don't go and punish the whole family of the murderer. So, like that. Not all of the Yakshas were punishable. Just whichever Yaksha had actually committed the act of killing Uttama. Yeah. Yes, hi, Vidya. Sorry, what's the question?
The question was that why did Swayambhuva Manu stop Dhruva to kill all the Yakshas?
Mm-hmm.
Because the Yakshas killed the brother of Dhruva, Uttama.
Oh, okay. Oh, it's the same question. It's like, same answer really. Because not all of the Yakshas killed Uttama. They didn't. It wasn't like all the Yakshas ganged up on Uttama and all together slaughtered him or killed him. But it was only somehow the one Yaksha killed Uttama. Yeah.
One more question.
Yes.
So you said that, we also have enemies.
Mm.
And Krishna also has enemies.
Mm.
But then how could Gandhiji say that everyone is brothers and sisters, nobody's
my
enemies.
Mm-hmm.
If Krishna also have enemies, and we also have enemies.
Yeah. Okay. Well. So the question is, how is it that, you know, Gandhi said that everyone is his brother and sister, and he has no enemies, but Krishna has enemies and we might have so-called enemies. It's so-called enemies. Like, actually, you know, Gandhi was killed. He died because somebody killed him. So the person who killed him was thinking of Gandhi as his enemy, whoever it was that killed Gandhi. But Gandhi didn't think of anyone as his enemy. So this is the distinction. It's in our consciousness that, you know, someone like children, even children, children might consider their parents their enemy. Like, they're like, oh, they're restricting me in so many ways, and I can't do what I want. So superficially, they might consider their parents as their enemy. But of course, the parents never would not, you know, generally, ordinarily, don't consider their children as their enemy. So you see? So
Krishna and all these people, they think that Krishna is their enemy, but Krishna thinks that I'm just playing with them.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Krishna doesn't think Kamsa is his enemy. Krishna loves Kamsa. Krishna loves everyone. Because everyone, it's only, you know, this is the one of the effects of the illusory energy, Maya, that it makes people think God is their enemy. But how can, you know, God is the father and well-wisher of every living entity, so how can he be anyone's enemy? But it's just a trick of the Maya that someone will think of God as their enemy. Yeah, but he actually, he doesn't think like that toward anyone. He loves everyone. Yeah. Yes, Mahatma.
Suridam Sarvabhutanam.
Yeah, Suridam Sarvabhutanam. A friend of every living entity. He's in our heart, you know, because people's so-called friends in this world, our friends can't always be there to support us, even though they might really be, you know, good friends. They can't really always be there for us in every circumstance, and but Krishna is with us all the time as the super soul in our heart. So he can always be, he is always with us in every lifetime, even that we're in. So Krishna is the real friend. Yes, Swatiji.
I was wondering what would be the path or the teachings of Jagannath Maharaj or Vishnu, for example. It's easy to understand about Shiva or Kumara or Shiva or Goswami because how they show the path.
Okay. I mean, so the question is about the Mahajans, that they explain the path of Bhagavad Dhamma, devotional service to Lord Krishna, and we hear a lot about Lord Shiva, Shukadeva Goswami, and their explanations of devotional service, but what about the Mahajans like Janak Maharaj and Vishnadev? What are their explanations of, you know, Bhagavad Dhamma, how to attain to Krishna? Well, we just have to read about their activities at Maharaj. And even within here, there is teachings of Lord Shiva's instructions to his disciples. Even Bhishmadev is also in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1. So he's a little bit speaking to Maharaj Yudhisthira on the battlefield of, at the end of the battle, Kurukshetra, I guess, speaking on the bed of arrows. So there he, you know, instructs Yudhisthira Maharaj in Krishna consciousness, because Yudhisthira Maharaj was lamenting at having killed so many people in the war, even though it was necessary. There was Krishna wanted that war, but still he was lamenting. And as far as Janak Maharaj, I can't say very much about him, that is devotion to Krishna or Rama.
Maybe just give a little summary for the viewers.
So Shukadev Prabhu was explaining that Janak Maharaj's teachings can be found in Ramayana, Mahabharata. And even just their life themselves, their life was exemplary in showing the path of Krishna consciousness. And we find that the essence of teachings of the Vedas and Krishna consciousness in Bhagavad Gita. It is nice to, you know, see different perspectives on this path of Krishna consciousness from the different Mahajans. So it is nice to, you know, look more deeply if we have that interest, look into Ramayana and Mahabharata to see the different teachings of these Mahajans. So, and thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Itai Gaur Brahmanandu.